Hey, this is Stacey Gatsoulias,
DC Lundberg,
Ryan Finkelstein,
Taylor Blake Ward,
host of Locked On Yankees,
Locked On Mariners,
Locked On Mets,
Locked On Angels,
and you're listening to Locked On Braves.
Locked On Braves.
Locked On Braves.
Part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Hey, and welcome to Locked On Braves, brought to you by the Locked On Podcast Network, found where all your favorite podcasts are located. You know where to go, whether that be iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, Pandora, TuneIn, wherever, CastBox, host of any other podcast apps. You can find Locked On Braves and all the other Locked On shows just about anywhere you care to look. Locked On Podcast, bringing you your favorite shows about your favorite teams every day, Monday through Friday, so you don't have to do the legwork, letting you be the fan you want to be. So you don't have to get around the water cooler and rely on Frank in accounting who doesn't really know what he's talking about. You can come in. You can tell him so. You don't need these guys telling you what to do. Just listen to a Locked On Podcast show, and you can be that guy around the water cooler. All right, so today, split squad for the Braves. That's why it's so late of a show today. I kind of waited so I could listen to a little bit of both games, kind of get things going to get a good look as we are. Really, we're about two and a half weeks from opening day. Opening day, I believe, is March 25th, and we are sitting on March 10th, so we are almost exactly 2 weeks away from opening day. And for today, it was the young guys kind of stealing the show. In the earlier game today, Mike Soroka got on the mound again, gave you four innings of scoreless ball. Now, did have three walks and only two strikeouts, which, you know, not what I'm used to seeing out of Mike Soroka, but I will say with this caveat, it did appear that he was working on his slider and changeup exclusively in a couple innings. So if he can get those things harnessed in time for the real games to start, then who cares? As for Soroka, if he can add a reliable changeup to his already devastating slider and fastball and sinker, that's just more salt in the wound to people in the NL East who have to try to hit him multiple times a season. It's not a fun thing. I would imagine you're looking at Soroka as your opening day starter. I would say there's a small chance they might decide to go with Folty, but I think we can all agree that Mike Soroka is the guy that they're probably going to give the ball to and that they probably should just give the ball to. He is the most reliable pitcher on the staff. He's the guy that you're going to kind of hinge all your bets on this season. But for the most part during that game, Johan Camargo with another double as Austin Riley hits a double in the second game against the Orioles tonight as they keep going back-to-back and head-to-head with each other. Anything one of them does, the other one tends to do as well. Austin Riley carrying an OPS of almost 1010, I guess. It was, what was it, 1009? So far this spring, Johan Camargo's is in the 800s. Still very, very good OPS. Both of them performing quite well. Riley with a couple dingers. And I want to say three or four doubles now. Camargo with one homer and one more double than Camargo or than Austin Riley. Both have played good defense. Camargo been slightly better on the defensive front, but those two guys completely balling out. We've talked about them a fair number of times, and we'll probably continue to talk about them as spring winds down because that is really the closest battle for spring, and it's really the most important battle coming into opening day is who's going to start at third base. Because we still aren't quite sure whether or not the loser is going to be on the Major League Ball Club. If both of them keep hitting like this, I don't see how the Braves could not have them on the opening day roster. It wouldn't make much sense to me. But then again, there are quite a few things that happen when you get to the coaching decisions that don't make sense to me. But I really wanted to take this time to focus in the first half on a tale of two prospects. So coming into spring training, Christian Pache and Drew Waters were far and away the 1 and 2 prospect in the Braves system. There's a healthy debate in Braves country about which one of the two is better and which one of the two is closer to contributing. Well, this spring should have answered all of those questions. Both of them started off kind of slow. Pache started off kind of slow as he tends to do. Waters was pretty hot early on, was getting on base and making some things happen. Christian Pache has started to kind of get his timing down. He's starting to come into it a little bit as he homered again today for his second home run. He's starting to rack up the hits a little bit. I believe his average is up to 269. His OPS up to 863 for the spring. Very, very good from the very talented young center fielder. Played some really, really good defense today as the Orioles kind of hit the Braves bullpen around the yard a little bit. this afternoon. So Pache got to get on his horse and show off some of those instincts that everybody's always raving about. And he looks not like he did in spring a year ago, where he was facing mostly minor leaguers and was carrying like a 400 batting average by the time his spring was done. But facing most of the major league arms, Pache starting to look like he's really starting to kind of get the timing down. He still struck out a fair number of times this spring, but he looks to be getting better as spring is going on. Unfortunately, it's almost the exact opposite for Drew Waters, as his strikeout barrage continued today, as he is up to a 61% strikeout rate this spring. His OPS is down to 451. So it feels like he hasn't had a hit in a week and a half, 2 weeks. You can really tell the frustration is starting to show. It's really starting to mount up. You can kind of hear him over the radio now. If you were listening today, you heard him utter a certain phrase that in spring might have gotten him fined by MLB. But you can tell he's starting to press a little bit. He's not really swinging at a lot of things, and he's getting upset at calls that are going against him. And it's more just frustration because he's not performing the way that he wants to perform, the way that he's used to performing, obviously. But this is one of those things that we talked about with Drew Waters. When things were going really good last year and he was tearing the cover off the ball, his BABIP was absurdly high. BABIP, of course, batting average on balls in play. Drew's has been, at no point in his minor league career has it been under 360. Just for reference's sake, his BABIP last year was higher than Yordan Alvarez's, which is absolutely insane. We knew that there was some regression coming in, particularly when you looked at his AAA strikeout numbers, which were, I believe, 36% strikeout rate in AAA. There's most certainly some bat-to-ball things that Drew needs to work on, and I'm fully confident that he's going to. It does kind of serve as a reminder that, hey, just because Acuna did this young doesn't mean all the prospects are ready at that same age. Drew still has a ways to go. For those that were thinking that Waters was ahead of Pache, this spring should have served as a full showcase of how Pache is ahead of Waters right now, definitively speaking. And that should one of the two have to come up, it would most certainly be Pache. But there's another prospect saying, hold on, don't count me out yet, and that is Ian Anderson. Sometimes the forgotten man among the big three of Waters, Pache, and Anderson. Ian went out today, started against Baltimore, and threw three scoreless innings. Looked very, very good. One of the more impressive things about him was his willingness to use off-speed pitches behind in the counts. For instance, in the second inning with Chris Davis up to bat, went 3-0 on Chris Davis, came all the way back, and got him on a 3-2 changeup. That's going to be a key pitch for Ian Anderson because his spin rates are not elite by any stretch. As a matter of fact, they're about as far from elite as possible. That's why a few people are very worried about his curveball and about his off-speed as he becomes a pro. But his changeup, I think, is going to be his most important pitch. His fastball's good. It's got some movement to it, but it's a good mid-90s fastball. He can dial it up if he needs to, and he still has a lot of growing to do into his body. But that changeup, I think, is going to serve as his main off-speed pitch. We're used to seeing curves and sliders being the main off-speed pitch. I think with Ian, I think that changeup is where he needs to develop if he wants to be a true top-of-the-rotation arm. I don't know that I would say he's going to be an ace. I mean, I don't like to throw that word around very lightly. I think there might be maybe 5 or 7 actual aces in Major League Baseball. Beyond that, you start talking about, I don't even like to say 10 because you're talking about a third of the league, and a third of the league does not have an ace. Unfortunately for the Braves, or whether you care about that stuff or not, the bullpen did kind of struggle against Baltimore and blew the lead for Ian Anderson. Shane Green gives up another home run, as he had a good outing, I want to say yesterday, the day before, and then back to giving up a home run today. It was the only blemish on his line, but it is a big blemish, as Shane Green has had a spring to forget. Fortunately for Shane Green, Grant Dayton came in and somehow was much worse. Dayton had a very, very bad outing, and really was a bad time for him to do that, as he's trying to lock down a spot in the bullpen as one of the lefties in there. Phil Pfeiffer comes in to clean up the mess, and this was really the first day that Pfeiffer has had any real control issues. Hit a batter to bring in a run, gave up a triple to Yusniel Diaz to clean the bags, which all of those were ended up charged to Grant Dayton. Pfeiffer with only one run charged on his line, but really didn't pitch great. He went an inning and 2/3, one strikeout. And then Tucker Davidson came in. So it's a little, I don't know if it's a little, it's a little weird to me that Tucker, we're midway through March. We've got about 2 weeks left, and Tucker's still working short stints out of the bullpen. I'm not real fond of that because I don't really want to burn Tucker Davidson as a reliever. I think he deserves to be a starter. You're talking about a guy with a 3-pitch mix, sometimes 4 pitches, but a guy that knows how to pitch to contact and has 100 miles an hour in his back pocket. That's not a guy that I want sequestered in my bullpen. This is a guy who's got a big body, who you think can eat innings, who's done a good job of that over the last couple seasons, and who has worked incredibly hard to raise his stock profile. I don't really want him in the bullpen. I want him as a starter. Even if it's in Gwinnett, I want him as a starter because I think his upside is far higher as a starter than it's going to be as a reliever. And I think there's a few other options, which we're going to touch on in the second half. I think there's a few options the Braves can go with that would mitigate that and allow them to keep Tucker Davidson on his starter trajectory. But we're going to go ahead and take our first break. When we come back, we're going to talk about that, as well as two other players who have spent a good deal of time in Atlanta who may be casualties of a crowded 40-man roster and dwindling expectations. We're going to get to that coming up next right here on Locked On Braves. Hey guys, welcome back to the show. Before we get into the nitty-gritty of the segment that I talked about right there at the end of the last segment, I want to clarify a little bit. I get asked a fair number of times, and a lot of people have been asking which prospect is going to come up first and who's going to have the biggest impact in 2020 for the Braves. Usually they're talking about Christian Pache and Drew Waters. To be honest, though, I don't think either one of them are going to make a big impact in 2020. Not because I don't think they're talented enough, or not because I don't think they could be ready by midseason, but because, really, the Braves have a ton of outfield depth, and there's a lot more that would have to go wrong for Christian Pache or Drew Waters to receive ample playing time in Atlanta. Because you got to figure, before the offseason finished and spring training started, as we got to the end of last season, I would have said if there was an injury to Ender and Ciarte, Pache would have been called up and Ender would have been finding himself a new home. I don't think that's the case anymore. Now you can just slide Ronald over to center field and you can either use Riley in right field, or you can have a strict platoon of Markakis and Duvall, which you should have had last season. I mean, with those two on the bench right now, you've essentially got a starting platoon sitting there on your bench. It kind of decreases the need to have Waters or Pache come up. And there's still a lot, like I mentioned last segment, there's a lot for those two to still work on. Just because they're insanely talented, we shouldn't take what happened with Ronald Acuña Jr. and apply that to every prospect. It's such a freak ability to be able to handle that young and to be able to adjust at the big league level. It's not generally a good idea to rush guys who you're trying to establish as superstars for your team. I mean, you want them to be able to flesh out for the most part before they come up, where they're only going to have to deal with the adjustment to the adjustment. I do think, though, if you're going to ask me which of the known prospects, which of the heralded guys is going to have the chance to have the biggest 2020 or to provide the most impact, first I would say Kyle Wright, obviously, but usually that's not what they're talking about. They're talking about ones who've never been up in the big leagues. In that case, I would say it is going to be Ian Anderson. And I think it's more the access of opportunity for him. As I mentioned, just too much depth in the outfield for me to really think that they would call up Pache or Waters, because they're not going to call up either one of those to sit or to split time. There'd be no point. I mean, they're talking about sending Riley down to Gwinnett just so he gets every day at bats and doesn't platoon. There's no way they would do that, Pache and Waters. But with Ian, there's not as much starting depth, at least on the big league roster, that's proven for me to say that Ian's going to spend all of 2020 in the minors. Now, I mentioned Kyle Wright. Obviously, he's ahead of Ian Anderson right now. I would imagine Touki Toussaint probably would be the second choice in that battle. I think Bryce might be finding himself passed up now that Ian is going to be in Gwinnett to start the year. And Ian didn't perform well enough in Gwinnett last year for me to just give him a spot right now. But there were some moments last year where the Braves were considering calling up Ian Anderson. And he kind of struggled with walks in Gwinnett. So it's a good idea that they didn't, because he still has a lot that he has to work on. That changeup is going to be the most important pitch, like I mentioned before. But there is a chance that Ian Anderson could see time in the big league on the big league roster before either of the other two do. And that's more because the Braves are in a position right now where they don't really have the time or the patience to let a lot of these young guys work through problems at the big league level. If these young guys aren't performing, they're not going to get more than two or three runs through the rotation before they're replaced. And you always run through probably about 7 to 9 starting pitchers during the course of a regular season. When you talk about people getting hurt or needing a little bit of extra rest or whatever the case may be, as we see with Cole Hamels, you don't go through an entire regular season just with the 5 that win the jobs out of camp. And I think Ian is a fair bet that if he comes up and he does well, he's going to get a few starts because they're not going to want to have to send him back down. If he goes and takes the job and runs with it, they'll be happy with it. But I think he's a lot closer to getting that opportunity than the other two. Not that I think he's a better prospect than Pache or Waters, because quite frankly, I think those two are far and away the best prospects in the system. But I think Ian has a chance, as long as he continues to progress, at making a difference sooner than those two, we'll say. But also, as I mentioned before the break, two guys who have spent a fair bit of time in Atlanta, who have done some really good things in Atlanta, were sent down, and really you could see them as casualties of the 40-man crunch, as the Braves are having a scramble to try to find some people to cut, to find spots for some of these other people they need to. If you want to carry Charlie Culberson or Yonhervis Solarte, you're going to have to clear 40-man spots. I mean, if you want to, you're going to have to clear 40-man spots, at least 2 spots for Felix Hernandez and or Kyle Wright or whoever else wins that battle to be in the opening day bullpen or maybe even the opening day rotation. But AJ Minter and Chad Sabatka got optioned the other day, and it's almost a sad string of things. Chad Sabatka hurts me in particular because I was fully on board the Chad Sabatka train. When you tell me a guy 6'7", throws 100 miles an hour, and can strike out about 2 per inning, I was all over some Chad Sabatka. His curveball is absolutely beautiful. Unfortunately, as is the case with a lot of long and lanky guys who are really tall, mechanics are not easily repeatable for him, and he struggles with command a lot, as he gives up far more home runs and far more hard-hit contact than a guy who has his stuff really should. Sabatka is a guy that I think can kind of slip through waivers, and the Braves will be able to work with him a little bit. I don't think they want to give up on him just because he does have such high-impact stuff. But we've talked about this before. There's so many young arms who the Braves are going to start to transition some to the bullpen as they try to figure out who's going to be starters, who's going to be relievers. Chad Sabatka does not have a long leash to be able to figure this out before he gets passed up by 4, 5, 6 other guys. And if that happens, he won't be in Atlanta. With AJ Minter, it's even worse. I'm not entirely certain AJ's actually going to clear waivers. I think if somebody took an opportunity on Jesse Biddle, I think somebody will definitely take an opportunity on AJ Minter. He's a guy that in 2018 put up almost a 1.5 WAR as a reliever, which that's no small feat. I mean, AJ's a guy that's got some really good run on his big league resume. Unfortunately, the last year and a half have been absolutely dreadful for him. And I'm not really sure what happened. I mean, he just kind of lost command. And the fact that both of his pitches, I mean, he's primarily throwing cutters and sliders now, which I've never have liked the combination of cutter and slider because they have the same movement. The only difference is velocity. But for whatever reason, AJ just hasn't been able to progress. In fact, he's regressed really, really hard. And he's been getting torn up. And he's getting torn up in spring, got torn up all last season. Really didn't do well in Gwinnett either the second or third time he was there. So for AJ, I kind of think his time in Atlanta is done. And the story of AJ Minter really should be a lesson in first impressions don't always work, where you get a really small sample size of a guy that nobody's really faced, comes up and dominates, and you instantly want to jump on the train. It doesn't always work like that. In the big leagues, it's all about being able to make an adjustment, and that's the hardest part of the game. I mean, coming out there and being good enough to get to the big leagues, that's not as hard for these guys that are already there. They're drafted and paid that much money for a reason. All of them are insanely talented. It's the guys being able to adjust once the league figures you out the first time. That's what makes it difficult to stay. And for AJ Minter, I would think, really, if it weren't for Luke Jackson last season and Luke Jackson really kind of reinventing himself and coming out of the woodwork, we would have put a lot more blame on AJ Minter last year. It would have been a much bigger story than it ended up being, because AJ was expected to be the guy in the bullpen. Unfortunately, he was dreadful. Biddle was dreadful. We know what it was like before the deadline, where we brought in Shane Green, Mark Melanson, and Chris Martin. Really, the story of Luke Jackson should be really celebrated a whole lot more, as a guy that was DFA'd 4 times, and really, he was the only reliable piece in our bullpen for months last season. Now he came back down to earth a little bit, but I mean, his ability to last that month and a half stretch where he was the only guy who could do anything, you can't really undersell that. So hopefully AJ can get it turned around. I don't think it'll be in Atlanta. I think somebody will give them an opportunity. Maybe somebody like Baltimore, who, you know, they're not looking to win games, so it's not like they can't take risks on these guys with high upside who have just seemed to stall out or regress. But it does leave Atlanta in a weird spot, as Tucker Davidson has been getting a lot of run as short shrift in the bullpen, short stints, which I told you in the last segment I'm not happy about. I want him to be a starter. I think he's earned the opportunity to be a starter, and I think he fits the team best as a starter. And I've mentioned Phil Pfeiffer to you guys before. I think another name to watch out that I keep forgetting to actually mention, and really it's a bad mark on me, Chris Rusin, who came into the roster, he's been absolutely stupendous. ERA sitting right around 2, striking out a ton of guys. He's a lefty that's got some big league experience. He's got a good pitch mix there. He throws a hard fastball too, coming out as a lefty. And he's been really, really good facing mostly major league guys. So I think Rusin and Pfeiffer, as I mentioned, kind of struggled a little bit with control today. Rusin might have taken a little lead in that job today. If he continues on this path, I think you'll see Chris Rusin kind of nail down another lefty spot. And that'd be good to see. I always enjoy seeing guys that have had higher pedigrees and then have struggled and are somehow able to reinvent themselves and come back. That's always a good story to see. And the Braves generally do really good with those types of guys. So remember the name Chris Rusin. Make sure you write that down. Don't be shocked if he's the guy that makes the opening day bullpen as another lefty in that bullpen, as Grant Dayton has really, really struggled. AJ Minter is gone. Really, it looks like it's going to be down to Pfeiffer, Davidson, and Rusin, but I think Rusin would have the lead over both of those guys. As it is, we have gone too long on this segment, as per usual, so we're going to cut it short for today. We'll be back tomorrow right here on Locked On Braves.